is Jeff Moore showing up to talk 106.5, 34 minutes after the hour on this Monday morning. We do appreciate you listening. Still to come on the program, Dale Jackson from WBNN in about an hour. I know a lot of you, for whatever reason, look forward to that segment. Also on the program today, State Representative Richie Horton. And we'll wrap it all up with Alabama Daily News' Mary Sell. So that and more, 251-343-0106. If you would like to respond to anything, get us up on that text line. That's the best way to do it. Joining us now on the program, very pleased to have this next gentleman on. Can add some clarity to a lot of questions, at least I got. Alabama Attorney General Steve Marshall on the line with us. General Marshall, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. You know, getting over the candy overdose of yesterday, so looking forward to a good week.
Nothing like kicking off the week with the sugar rush, but I guess it's just part of the program. General, Friday you put out the announcement about the lawsuit challenging the Biden administration's vaccine mandate. Can you walk us through it on what grounds the states we're joining with, and then I guess the venue, et cetera?
Yeah, a couple things to sort of dive into. You know, we had seen, obviously, previously the president issued two executive orders, one relating to federal employees, the second involving federal contractors. And what is obvious is that there was a clear strategy on behalf of the Biden administration to slow play the rollout of the federal contractor rules that frankly was surprising everybody, because I don't know about you, Jeff, but you know, we learned a great deal just as a result of the last minute amendments to contracts that were sent out to the state of Alabama. Actually, how many different agencies were federal contractors, and what this ultimately meant to the state of Alabama as a whole. And so that's why, you know, very proactive with, I think, six other states with us in the action that was filed in Georgia on Friday afternoon that is pushing back to declare this action on behalf of the president to be unconstitutional and unlawful. And so it's one thing that we recognize is in need of immediate relief because of the implementation period that exists under that rule. And so one of the things I think you'll be seeing filed this week is the request to enjoin or to be able to stop the enforcement of that rule until we have an opportunity for our arguments to be heard, which really are very consistent with what you've seen pushed back from us during the Biden administration as a whole, and that is a president who's abusing executive authority, who doesn't want to recognize the limits that the Constitution and law create on the position of president, and ultimately trying to use federal dollars to implement public health policy in this country in a way that is not contemplated by law, nor is something that's appropriate for the president to do.
So, and he's doing this out of, you know, through the executive order, but my understanding is he's somehow applying administrative law, OSHA rules, and would the argument be that he is misappropriating them in some sort of fashion?
Yeah, and let's remember, Jeff, this hasn't even gotten to the OSHA portion yet. You know, that's the next fight, and that is going to be when they finally issue this 100 employer or more rule that's going to come out any day now that OSHA is going to be the one to monitor. But this is one that is separate and apart from that. Although, you know, interesting to read reports nationally that maybe, you know, 25% of the nation's employees are somehow linked to federal procurement process. And when I talk about really the limits on the president, I mean, who would have contemplated that Congress, by granting procurement authority to the president, would allow for him to do anything more than secure, you know, goods and services for the country? And instead, kind of an issue that we've talked about before is really sort of the use of federal dollars to overcome the 10th Amendment, to be able to implement policy that federal government really isn't allowed to enter into, but yet use federal dollars in a way that allows them to control what's going on in the states. And so, you know, we not only have this fight that's ongoing, but I think you'll see additional lawsuits filed once the OSHA rule comes into play. But also remember there's one other one, and that is, you know, CMS money, or money that's used to reimburse for Medicaid and Medicare. They're going to adopt a rule that's going to require anybody that receives that funding likewise to have the mandate. So this is the first of what will be many, and not only, you know, are you seeing, you know, my colleagues from these six different states be involved in this case, but I think you'll see other cases that will be filed and have been filed already across the country. And Missouri filed one, Florida has filed one, that other states have joined, Arizona as well, with the entire goal for everybody, I believe, to seek that relief to be able to enjoy what the president's done.
Now, how much did the governor's executive order play into this? It sounded to me like you already had something in the works. Does this does it even matter to what you're trying to accomplish here in the federal courts?
Well, I think it clearly becomes more of a policy statement, frankly, that the governor expressed support for the litigation efforts and also requested that state agencies cooperate. And I think one thing that again, we learned as a result of communication with many of the relevant state agencies is the fact that we as a state, not just in the state entity there, not just necessarily citizens in the state, but as a state entity, were directly impacted by this rule in a way that we didn't expect. And so I think the executive order itself, while not creating any kind of private right that otherwise didn't exist, is a clear policy statement that the state of Alabama stands to oppose this.
Well, when you talk about state agencies all across the board take some kind of federal funding, the interpretation from at least Auburn and the University of Alabama is, go ahead, you're going to have to go ahead and take the shot. What is the rule there? How does this apply to state employees?
Yeah, it doesn't directly apply to state employees across the board. It would be specific. The efforts of the Biden administration would be on those employees that are subject to those relevant agencies. But you know, what you see are layers of efforts to administer this from the federal government, because you have the executive order in place, then you have non-lawful, basically, rulemaking through guidance that has been issued by the federal government, and then also an additional website with FAQs to try to give guidance. And what the universities have both spoken to is really the fact they believe that the broad-based nature of the implementation of their policies was as a result of what the Biden administration said about who should be covered. But if you take really this to an extreme, you know, if you're really trying to regulate public health policy for employees in the workplace, then you know, there's a lot more exposure that goes around the dinner table than there does necessarily sitting in your office. And so there are no limits to ultimately what the Biden administration may attempt to do. And so, again, not only do we see a misplaced policy to accomplish the goal that the Biden administration has set, but it's clearly overbroad. And when we see institutions like Alabama and Auburn have to apply it so broadly, I think, again, that is a reflection of the unlawful nature of what we're seeing and why, you know, we believe that we'll prevail in court.
So the hope is now that it's filed, you know, kind of give us some typically what happens, like a timeline here, but not necessarily what you know, don't make predictions, but how something like this would play out in the federal court.
Well, I think you'll see filed this week. You know, we have the initial complaint that was filed on Friday, the request for a temporary restraining order and preliminary injunction, and that's the initial relief that we hope to get to stop the implementation of the policy while we have a chance to be able to litigate it. We also know that there is pending deadlines that are in play with regard to some other states that likewise have the complaint pending. And so we would ask for an expedited calendar with the court there in Georgia and not only allow us to be able to have our opportunity to brief it fully, but obviously the federal government has the responsibility to do the same. But I think the urgency is well known to everybody that's involved in this, and that's why we'll communicate that to the court and have hopefully an expedited schedule, because you know, with a December 8th deadline that is in play, that's dictated by the executive order, you know, there's an urgency to the court acting in this case.
Now, some of these employers, some of these federal contractors are already implementing this. Is there a do-over? Can they get back and say you got laid off for whatever reason, you didn't want to get the vaccine? How does this pertain to these individuals?
Yeah, I don't know that there's necessarily a do-over per se, but what I hope that this does for not only those within state government, but also more broadly across the board, because the suit, although filed on behalf of the state of Alabama, you know, to the extent that we prevail on one of the counts that really relates to the procurement authority of the federal government, it would apply broadly across the spectrum of those involved, even if it's just a private business that otherwise isn't connected to Alabama, for example. And so, you know, what we're hoping is that those private businesses particularly will monitor the progress of this, but I do not anticipate that you would see any action taken on behalf of a state employee that would be adverse to them. The other thing I can speak to specifically on the state side is that one of the things that we have encouraged through the issuance some guidance last week is that that those that are subject to this rule, that we encourage them to give very broad and liberal interpretation to anybody that claims the religious exemption to this vaccine itself. That is something that already exists in federal law, and although there's not a state law equivalent, we believe it's appropriate for those that are evaluating these to give the clear benefit of the doubt to employees who are making that request, which would likewise provide relief from the mandate itself.
Would the Alabama legislature, now they're in special session now, would if they were to pass some kind of state law, would this aid you in your process? Would it complicate it? I guess it really depends on what was passed, but do you see a role for the legislature to make a statement here?
Well, the legislature has an opportunity to make law, right? I mean, that's their role and that's their opportunity within our form of government. There's nothing that they can do necessarily that enhances the claims that we're making here based on those really being centered around federal law, federal administrative law, and then constitutional basis. But they have their ability to weigh in this in whatever way they see fit. And so I know that's a discussion that's going on right now, and I'm sure they'll continue to be able to debate that over the coming days.
So do you have a, you know, if the legislature does pass a law, then it becomes, I think the question is, can that's not a law that was passed by Congress necessarily, although I guess the interpretation of some of the administrative law aspects to it are, but does a state law challenging an executive order, is that even an interesting sort of a question there, which prevails?
Yeah, I think the sort of the legal concept that you're getting to is really this question of preemption. Is generally there's a doctrine that allows federal law to preempt state law that is in contradiction to it. Now, again, number one, it's a fairly narrow doctrine, but one that, you know, it comes up in a variety of cases, but the question really is going to be the authority in which the federal law was adopted. Remember, that can be regulatory in nature as well. So that's really part of what these battles will be in court is, you know, has the state, or this is the federal government acted with rightful authority, which we don't believe it has, which means that if, in fact, there was no valid federal action, then state preemption would not apply.
So then you think, is it true that getting at it from your from the process you're using now is a better process than having to, I guess, defend state law, or do you have a preference either way?
Oh, I think it really depends on the case here. You know, we'll be aggressive like we have been in others where we've had an opportunity to succeed when we believe that there's clear authority for us to move forward, believing that the president has exceeded executive authority on multiple grounds. But yeah, this is not a case. You know, take for example the Texas abortion law that people have talked about so much, where rather than us being in this case suing the Biden administration, where you have the Department of Justice coming after Texas, where they're defending the sovereignty of state law. So little different scenarios, but both of which are part of the battles that we've seen and will continue to see with the federal government over the coming years.
They have a bunch of states that have joined in on this suit, and I assume it's basically the same concept here about overstepping. Is it in the realm of state government to make this case against this federal mandate? Are you acting more of a representative of the people of the state or a representative of the state itself?
Yeah, That's a fine line distinction, right? But I think what is clear here is that we're not only representing state agencies that are impacted, but the state of Alabama as a whole. There could be some argument as to whether or not is the standing of the state to be able to argue on behalf of private business, which is one of the general issues about evaluating this claim generally. But as I told you earlier, there is a count in the complaint itself dealing with the procurement authority of the president that would apply broadly than beyond state employees and state agencies, but in fact would cover those that are privately employed that are federal contractors as well. So it's kind of a unique case, frankly, Jeff, as far as how that would go. But our arguments, although are directed at specifically the state of Alabama's vested interest, would likewise, I think, cover those that are not even parties to the case because of the broad application of the law.
And finally, is there anything comparable? You mentioned the unique nature of this case. So is there anything comparable that where a group of attorneys general would challenge something the federal government did like this that we could compare it to?
Oh, I mean, Jeff, we've seen almost, I think it's now 38 separate lawsuits that have been filed during the Biden administration already by attorneys general from across the country. We've been proactive in those on a variety of issues. So I think, again, it's an ongoing battle against an unprincipled administration, and we're going to continue to make sure that the checks that our framers put on executive authority are maintained.
General, you've been very kind to make time for us this morning, and hopefully we can get you on again here soon.
Thank you, sir. Take care.
Attorney General Steve Marshall there, pretty clear what they're trying to accomplish. We got to get a break here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5.